Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.
It's 8:18 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the second quarter of energy use data of the 48 communities competing in the $5 million Georgetown University Energy Prize has been released. In the studio to update us on how well the Summit County community is doing, I have Matt Abbott, Executive Director of Summit Community Power Works, along with Project Manager Mary Krista Smith. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So coming into the second quarter, we made a big deal of being first, that after the first quarter results, but we've now dropped to sixth place. So Matt, what does that mean? I mean, are there other communities doing a better job? Is it that Georgetown's figured out a better way to read the data? Or, I mean, this is data collected for April, May, and June, so maybe it was still cold and we had our heaters on.
So I think they've got 9 months of data that they've plugged in. And what, you know, we've had our own consternations around how Georgetown's handling the data. But this tells us that we're definitely in sixth place. If they released it, we're in sixth. And Huntsville, Alabama's number one right now.
Yeah, so Mary Krista, I mean, we're still in the top 10, so I guess that means that we have done an okay job. I mean, residents changing out a lot of light bulbs, some thermostats. Do you have the numbers on those?
Well, I believe that the students in Park City have changed, and in Summit County, South Summit and North Summit have changed out over 8,000 bulbs. And from the soft reporting we had during the Ski Town Showdown, an additional 3,000. And so we're over 11,000 reported, and I know that there's more happening than that.
All right. So you report on South Summit and North Summit. I mean, we've hired an energy guy to help with the school districts. Is he working with all of the school districts?
Yeah, that's Cam Snyder, and Cam's been he's working a lot with North Summit right now, and it sounds like Park City School District is asking for more of his attention recently, too. So I don't know of any major projects he's completed, but he's working hard with Rocky Mountain Power to get those projects lined up, get the ROIs laid out, and then work with the school district boards to execute.
Yeah. Do we know how big of a consumer the school district is? I mean, the fact that we've hired a project, you know, an energy project manager.
We've been able to identify that there could be potentially over 1 million kilowatt hours saved in 1 year between the three school districts. And Park City is definitely the biggest opportunity for savings, as they consume three times the energy as the other two school districts per square foot. And having spoken with Todd Hansen at Park City School District, along with representatives from Rocky Mountain Power last week, it's exciting to hear that they are looking at recommissioning the buildings and doing a complete audit for LED lighting to take to the school board within the next 6 weeks or so that they have the numbers and can decide on the capital investment to make those changes.
That's impressive. Three times the amount of energy as the other two school districts?
Why is that? Per square foot.
I mean, is it just bad buildings?
I'm sure it's a collection of things. I mean, I see it with city buildings. You know, we do some value engineering. There's how the buildings are operated. You know, if you get an air conditioning system fighting a heating system, you can burn a lot of energy pretty quick. And that's what the recommissionings are for. It's take a look at all those systems, see if they're in balance, see if there's just like little tweaks that need to happen, or see if it's a deeper issue, you know, more based on the assets that were purchased originally.
So, Matt, Park City has also made huge strides. I mean, we've replaced all of the outdoor lights to LED. We have turned on that massive solar array there at Mark.
Yeah.
We've seen solar go up in the county as well, Justice Center, the health center, and the fire district as well. Is that enough, though? I mean, is it more than about just changing out light bulbs?
It definitely is. You know, I'm proud of the work that the municipality's done and the county's done so far, and there's a lot of opportunities over the next year and the next, like, you know, 8 to 10 years. A lot of the work we're looking at is, you know, a decade's worth of work. So we're making big cuts now. I think we've shaved 9% of our energy usage at the city this year, which is a huge number for us. That's, you know, it's a lot of money. In savings, and we're looking at doing a lot more in the next year. So it's you know, when it comes to the Georgetown Prize, it's how can we get the other institutions on board, and it's definitely how do we get the residents on board. That's you know, West Side residents is where we're looking.
Mm-hmm. And because that's really, as we reported, you know, 3% in the schools. I mean, I think it's here in Summit County four times as opposed to, in terms of energy use, as opposed to the
Correct.
Rest of the state.
Yeah, energy intensity in Park Cities, we use about four times the average per household.
And why is that? We just have a lot of electronics, or we just have big houses with lots of lights, or do we know?
We have large homes, and they tend to be inefficient homes. We do not have the highest efficiency building standards in the country, and so it's a combination of large homes and the elevation where we are. We're heating outside surfaces. If we could take a look at putting our heat tape on timers, our hot tubs on timers, turning off heated driveways when we're not using them, that would go a long, long way. And I think that what the number six ranking calls all of us out as a community to do is to recognize that every single resident has a responsibility and an opportunity to participate and cut their use. We're the ones we've been waiting for. It's up to us, everyone who's listening. And if everyone just did two things, put in a smart thermostat and change their light bulbs to LED, they would cut their consumption by an average of 40%, and we would win. Those are two simple changes that every resident can make.
So do we know what Huntsville, Alabama has done to get into that first place ranking?
Yeah. So Huntsville, Alabama, I think their total population is around 2,700. It's the county that's competing, and they did on-bill financing. So with their financing mechanism, they're spending $4,000 to $5,000 per household to do energy efficiency upgrades. And you know, that's a huge cut, and that's also not replicable. And one of the things we're graded on for the Georgetown Prize is how replicable is your program. And on-bill financing isn't something everybody can do.
Right, and that's a big part of it. I mean, energy yeah. reduction is part of it. And then what? Coming up with a plan that could be taken to any community in the country.
Correct. Yeah. So it's, you know, huge congratulations for the cuts they've made. I'm sure they're going to have even deeper cuts next year. But it's really what can we do here? And I think, you know, when it comes to our own egos and competition, Aspen's number three right now. You know, Aspen used to be, I think, sixth or seventh. And we were number one. So it's good to keep up a rivalry with our friends in Aspen.
Well, we won the showdown, but then they must have, done something to change that, something.
They've got, you know, a smaller population. They own their own electricity utility, so they've got more leverage. But that doesn't mean they're going to win it.
Now, Mary Christa, you've also been meeting with folks from our lodging properties to do what exactly?
I've been meeting with different property managers to address what they need in order to help their residents and owners cut their consumption. And what I hear over and over again, and what we are doing, is putting together a program that they can deliver to their owners to say, here's a company that can come in, audit your property, and change the light bulbs and change the thermostats for you. And we are really excited to have local companies, Chesley Electric, SES Green Energy, Super Green Energy, that offer LED light bulbs, that offer smart thermostat installations, so it's just easy and simple for the property managers to do it for their entire group.
All right. So given the sixth place ranking here, I mean, do we have a plan to turn things around or just kind of stay the course?
I think we have some great programs that are coming up. We've got community solar. We haven't named it officially yet, but another bulk purchase program for residential PV. Mary Chris has been working on a bulk purchase for smart thermostats. So we've got some great programming coming up. And I think what we're really focusing on is marketing what's been working.
Yeah. You have held, I think, three meetings in Summit and Wasatch County about community solar. Are we ready? I mean, you're just looking for volunteers at this point? Are you looking for people wanting to participate in getting solar on their rooftop? Or
we are putting together our steering committees, and there are two key steering committees. The first will choose the installer, and the second will do outreach and marketing. And so anyone who is interested in being part of the process of choosing an excellent installer or helping us to market, we welcome your participation.
Did you get a good turnout at the meetings?
We did get a good turnout, but we could use more. We could use more representation and more people who want to be involved. And it should be noted that our community bulk purchase will also include Wasatch County as well. And we had a great turnout in Wasatch County, which helps us to show our replicability as well. when we can expand and offer our programs in counties outside of Summit County.
So if somebody is interested in helping out with that, what do they do? Just email you, or is that the best way? Or
yes, just email me, mc.smith@scpw.org.
Okay. What are some of the other things that you think SCPW has done well that are kind of prize-winning actions?
That's a great question. I think we've had great success in the east side of the county, and that's really been from like a grassroots community engagement perspective. And the programming there, I think, is replicable. And that's what we get to test this year. We get to see if, you know, can we work with Wasatch County to get more of our programming out there? I know that their utility is interested. Can we do the same thing in Salt Lake County? And how do we repeat the LED switch in the schools? How do we, you know, nail down this control switch program, and how do we scale that? So it's really about, if we're seeing success, can we scale it? Or is it just a fluke? Or is it something we don't quite understand yet? Because I think our uptake numbers are fantastic. It's just getting it into every home.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, I mean, with Huntsville, you know, where they're actually kind of paying people to participate. In our case, I mean, this is a part-time job for Mary Krista. I mean, which could actually
be. She wishes it was part-time. Yeah. I think it's full-time for her.
But could be absorbed, though. I mean, right through a municipality or a mm-hmm. county or something, yeah. Right? It's not that it needs a special person. She was hired actually just to run this two-year program.
Correct. Yeah. And that's the goal, is to, how do we package this mm-hmm. and give it to other communities or other utilities to run with it?
All right. You know, you also received a grant to do a marketing plan. Do you think that's making a difference?
I do. And there is a lot of foundational work that goes into creating the campaign itself as far as graphics and design and all of that, which has been completed. And we have hired Panic Button Media to push it out. And the concepts they've come up with, I think, are exciting and engaging and appealing. And so as we really put it out there in the beginning of 2016, we hope to see huge engagement. Already our social media numbers are rising, and that's exciting to see as a first step. But we need more, and fast.
All right. So we've got the first 9 months. When do you expect to have the first year?
Oh, God. Based on how Georgetown's been turning the data around, I guess around March. I really hope January, February, but it's taken them about 3 months per data cycle.
All right. And in the meantime, people should put a smart thermostat on their Christmas list, huh?
Absolutely.
It's a great gift. It keeps giving every month.
Yeah, and use it while you can, right?
Yeah.
While you got the heater on. Okay, anything else you wanted to mention about?
No, just check us out at scpw.org and contact Mary Krista Smith if you've got questions.
Okay, Mary Krista and Matt, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:30.
Mark Baker here from Esko Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. And we are the proud sponsors of the Marketplace Morning Report on KPCW. We only hire background-checked, drug-tested, and fully licensed technicians. We also offer financing and several ways to pay. More information at escoutah.com or 855-ESCO-NOW.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW, our local source for Park City news. Our agents are Summit and Wasatch County's source for real estate, and we can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
KPCW News Time now, 8:31. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio with us now with his weekly update, Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
All right, well, let's start off with the Alpine. The men were had some fast races, GS, Super G, and downhill.
Yeah, we have a really big schedule of races going on right now in Italy. In fact, as we speak, the athletes getting ready for a parallel giant slalom night race coming up in Alta Badia. But the weekend kicked off on Friday with a Super G in Val Gardena. Andrew Weibrich continued his top performances of the season, finishing in fifth place there. Good finish for him. And then on Saturday, this was an opportunity for Steven Nyman to try to claim a record fourth win on the Saslong course in the downhill. A little mistake at the top kind of put him back a little bit, ended up in ninth. But the real story of the day for the U.S. ski team was the performance of young Bryce Bennett from Squaw Valley. This is a gangly kid, 6'7" feet tall, looks more like a basketball player. And boy, he had a phenomenal World Cup. Scored his first points at Beaver Creek 2 weeks ago and then came out and finished sixth in the Val Gardena downhill, starting out of the 57th start position. Folks, you should check out the video on our U.S. Ski Team Facebook page. A wild and crazy run, very much like the run of Andrew Weibrecht when he had his first breakthrough at Birds of Prey back in 2007. So great finish for Bryce. And then on Sunday, a pretty good performance overall with three top performances by U.S. Ski Team athletes. Ted Ligety finishing fourth just off the podium. Ted's still hurting from that crash he had at Beaver Creek a couple of weeks ago. As folks recall, last week in Val d'Isère did not make the second run. And then in Val Gardena, or actually in Alta Badia, a course that he has won on twice previously, pretty good first run, put him in striking distance, but really not quite competitive to get to the podium, ended up finishing fourth. Ted is in the parallel tonight. That race starts at 10:30 Park City time, I believe, 10 or 10:30 Park City time. So we'll see how he does there. But just trying to rest up and get fit again.
That's kind of fun for him then, huh, those parallel races?
Yeah, they are. This actually, haven't done too many of these. They've tried to do some city events the last few years, and those just haven't really come off all that well. But they're doing one in Alta Badia, so a little bit of an experiment. It will count for World Cup points. U.S. with three athletes in it. Andrew Weibrecht going up against Tim Jitloff in the first round. So we're going to lose one of those right there, but we're going to move one on. And then Ted is going up against Francis Cyprien Richard in the first round today.
All right. And I saw a tweet from Ted, and I'm trying to think of who he was expressing condolences to. Somebody got hurt?
I think he was, I think it was Matthias Meyer of Austria who crashed in the downhill.
Oh, like serious season
not
ending?
Not that, it'd be season ending. Matthias Meyer, the Olympic champion, crashed in the downhill on Saturday. So, you know, Ted, I think, just sent some wishes out for him.
All right. And women were in France?
Women in Val d'Isère, France, and also in Courchevel. First of all, in Val d'Isère, an Alpine combined, the first one of the season on Friday. Lindsey Vonn, with a strong background on this course in the Alpine combined. She was going up against Lara Gut from Switzerland. We pretty much know what the overall battle will be now. Lindsey went in with the overall lead in the Audi FIS World Cup this weekend, led the downhill, and then in the slalom, really skied a great slalom run, but it wasn't quite good enough. She lost by a hundredth of a second to Lara Gut from Switzerland, and that pulled Lara within just a few points of Lindsey in the overall. And then on Saturday, as I think a lot of folks have already seen, while it wasn't a bad day for the U.S. ski team with four in the top 20, led by Loren Ross in 10th, Lindsey Vonn with the lead about midway through the course just got kicked to the right really hard up on one ski, a phenomenal recovery. And again, this is one to watch. You can see this on our Facebook page. But she unfortunately lost the points. Lara Gut won the race and took over the overall World Cup lead. So a tough break for Lindsey. I think we're going to see that battle go down to the wire now. And over the first few races, we were kind of wondering who is going to be the contenders for the title, and I think we know that right now. In the giant slalom on Sunday, Lindsey, the only U.S. finisher, in 13th position. She'd won a GS a week ago. She's, as she was saying, ready for a break and take a little rest. So she's going to take a holiday break. The women will be back in action next week in Lienz, Austria, with a giant slalom and a slalom. The men will be over in Santa Catarina, Italy, for a downhill next week.
Okay. And freestyle, I had some competitions in Beijing. How was the weather?
You know, they had a big smog alert while we were there. But it was a good week for the U.S. ski team. A victory by Ashley Caldwell. And just to kind of set the stage on this, the Chinese are certainly one of the dominant teams in the sport. And anytime you go into their lair, you're on their home turf, and it's a tough competition, and they just really stack the deck against you. So for Ashley Caldwell to win that event and Kylie McKinnon to take third, Kylie, the reigning overall World Cup champion in aerials, was a pretty amazing accomplishment. What's doing it for Ashley right now is she's one of only three women in the world who are doing triple flips. The men do triple flips, but the women have really not been too aggressive in moving into that territory. So there's one Ukrainian athlete and one Chinese athlete doing triples. And if you look at Ashley's triple from Beijing, it was just near perfect. She just totally landed the thing. And ironically, she almost didn't make the trip. She'd been having some knee problems. She thought that she might stay home. And about a week ago, she made the decision, yeah, I'm going to go over and give this a try. So she ends up with the win. So congratulations to her. Her fourth career win, actually second in a row, as she won the season finale in Minsk last year. So good weekend for the women.
Okay. And then the cross-country folks were in Italy.
Yeah, in Toblach, Italy, a little bit of a precursor to the Tour de Ski, which starts up on January 1st, a weekend with a sprint race and a distance race. Great finish for Simi Hamilton, finishing second in the freestyle sprint on Saturday. Second best career finish for him. He actually won a stage sprint 3 years ago in the Tour de Ski, so great to see him up on the podium. Interestingly enough, we had a Brit on that podium too. The sprint event certainly bringing some diversity into the sport. So the cross-country team will be staying over in Europe. They get a little bit of a holiday break, and then they'll be back in action starting January 1st in the Tour de Ski. A strong U.S. team going into that. Rosie Brennan from Park City will be among those starting the Tour de Ski this year, which is a stage race that continues over about a 10-day period, touching on Germany, Switzerland, and finishing with a hill climb in Italy. So anxious to watch that. That event will be live streamed every day, and also we'll have a daily recap show on Universal HD, so fans will be able to follow that along starting the 1st of January.
Okay, and then again, with many of the teams just taking the holiday break, we'll skip a week and we'll see you back in the new year.
Yep, I'll take a holiday break next week, and then we'll be back on the, what'll be the 4th of January to give you a recap of all the holiday activities. So happy holidays to everybody here in Park City. Appreciate you following along with the team.
Okay, Tom, thanks. It's Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. News time now, 8:39.
This USSA report is funded in part by USANA Health Sciences, offering a personal approach to nutrition, business, and customer care. USANA.com for more information.
Hi, this is Catherine Simos, president of Grand Valley Bank's Park City branch. We have been part of this community since 1998 as a local town bank. We take pride in giving back by supporting KPCW and many other local nonprofits. We have branches in Heber City, Midway, and Park City on Deer Valley Drive. GrandValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
It's 8:40. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Still to come, we'll be talking with the editor of Park City Magazine, Melissa Fields, along with one of the contributors, Tom Clyde. Later on in the hour, we'll be checking in with Karen Yoakum with the PC Mark. They're offering a number of programs this winter. She'll be telling us about that. We've got 4 new inches of snow overnight at both Park City and Deer Valley, 8 inches in the last 24 hours. We've got 24 lifts and 75 runs open at Park City. One bowl. 4 parks, 44 of those runs have been groomed overnight, including Home Run and Mercury. Deer Valley reporting 18 of its lifts open with 60 runs, 35 of those groomed with 3 bowls. And the groomers' picks today, Bird's Eye, Supreme, and Solid Muldoon. We've got a bunch of new snow at the White Pine Touring Center. We still have the 3 and 5K track loops open with classic tracks set around all of those. Another 7 or so kilometers there on the farm, but very thin cover. And also have got Basin Recreation out grooming today. And Rick from Mountain Trails out packing portions of Round Valley, I should say, specifically in the Land of Oz area. You can check their Facebook pages for updated grooming information. It's 8:41. Well, the new edition of Park City Magazine is out, and in the studio with me to highlight some of this issue's features, I have magazine editor Melissa Fields. I also have on the phone with me one of the contributors, Tom Clyde. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hi.
Tom, you there? Okay. So I get... Are you on your tractor?
No. I need to go back out and finish plowing. It's one of those mornings where we're having the contest to see who can get the most stuck out here.
Okay. Well, we were hoping that that would be the first interview, somebody on a tractor, but maybe next time. Anyway, let's start with you, Melissa. I guess putting out a magazine is a lot sort of like having babies. I mean, they all have their own personalities, and you can't have a favorite, so tell us about what you're most excited about with this one.
Well, and I have to say, maybe you can have a favorite with the magazine because I am really pleased with this issue. And I think, you know, obviously it highlights the big story of this winter is the connection of Park City Mountain Resort and Canyons, which Tom did a great job writing about. But, you know, we also have some of the features that people really look forward to in the magazine, the Summit Stories profiles. We've profiled 3 local women in this issue. We also, Jean Gendron also wrote a great story about the Winter Sports School, which to me, I mean, you know, that's a huge asset to our community and is not found actually elsewhere in the country in terms of the curriculum and the format that they use there. And then we have, you know, a lot of longtime contributors like Mark Menlove wrote a great piece about backcountry skiing and the Park City Ridgeline, which still does indeed exist. and how important it is to protect what remaining open space we have in the backcountry on this side of the ridgeline. And then there's lots of other great, you know, little pieces. There's a Q&A with Charlie Lange, kind of how he, you know, his observances over the years in Park City, and as well as his transition from, you know, being, you know, a corporate guy at Fidelity Investments to his latest passion and is photography. So, yeah, I hope that people will be really pleased with it.
All right. Well, Tom, let's turn to you. You wrote the cover story, as we mentioned. It's titled Murdoch to McConkie's, An Insider's Guide to Navigating the United States' Largest Mountain Resort. Prior to getting your Epic Pass, I think you mostly stayed on the Park City side of the mountain or Deer Valley. So are you exploring what was formerly known as Park West?
Well, back in the Park West days, I had a $60 student season pass there. But that was a long, long time ago. So I'm familiar with the old part of the mountain and not as familiar with the new part, and have been looking forward to doing some more exploration there. I didn't have the right pass set up last year to get over there as much as I would have liked, but the 9990 area and Dreamcatcher Dreamscape are both really nice, and there's some really fun skiing off Peak 5 if you don't mind a really slow chair.
Yeah. Now, when you saw the new map, I think you described it as the size of a sheet. You kind of wondered, is it really possible to ski 7,300 acres from end to end in a day? Have you tried?
Well, not enough has been open yet to really give it the try. So last spring, I did my best by skiing to where the from the Orange Bubble all the way to the base of the gondola that was, you know, at that point a stake in the ground, and then I did the reverse on the Park City side. And from a transit standpoint, if you're just trying to meet somebody who's staying at the other base area, you can connect in the middle pretty efficiently. I was surprised at how quickly you could get from end to end. Not a lot of skiing in that. It's just a whole lot of, you know, using the lifts as transportation. If you branch off to do the skiing, and of course the skiing along the way is incredible on both sides, I think it would take one really full day to get the to really capture it all. And then as the city and Vail have already discovered, at the end of the day you're at the wrong base and the lifts are closed, and how do you get back? So they've improved bus service between the two to complete the loop. I was talking with Nathan Rafferty on the opening day, and neither of us think you could actually ski it all in a day. Nathan's a lot more ambitious. I'm sure he'll try it at some point. But to really hit all 40 lifts in a day is that would be huge.
Yeah.
I don't think it could be done. If people haven't ridden the gondola, though, it opened Friday, unofficially, I guess, opened Thursday. The views from there are absolutely spectacular. The gondola itself is a giant upgrade from any gondola that we have in the area. It rides smoothly. It doesn't vibrate when it goes over the towers. It doesn't make that thrumming noise that makes your ears hurt the whole way. It is just a wonderful piece of equipment, great views, and the interconnect, I think, is going to work pretty well.
So I want to talk a little bit about that, but first, do you foresee a sequel here then for next year's magazine?
Who knows?
Well,
willing to write something. We're definitely willing to publish it. He's a great writer. I mean, he just zeroes in on, you know, what kind of the community is thinking, and in a really entertaining, plain-spoken way. And yeah, I loved having him part of this issue.
So, Tom,
thanks,
I mean, speaking of that connection, I mean, is that what you see the gondola being used for primarily? Really, just to get from resort to resort? I mean, or to ski both resorts, or is it just to kind of get out of the long lines at Silverlope? Because that's really going to be impacted.
The gondola itself doesn't really access any skiing. And that seems a little counterintuitive to have spent that kind of money on a lift. And you know, you can get off at the ridge line, and there are I guess, a couple of groomer runs that'll take you down to the canyon's base. On the Park City side, it'll be gated, and if conditions are right on Pinecone Ridge, you could ski back down that direction, and I guess end up at Mother Lode or King Con. But the sun exposure and the way the wind hits that ridge, it's not often very good skiing at that location. You've got to get across the gully at the bottom. What will be interesting is to see how Vail's number crunchers analyze this, and I'm sure that they've got all sorts of data collection stuff available, and they'll know how many people got on the orange bubble and ended up skiing Park City, and how many people went up Town Lift and ended up skiing in Dreamscape, and they will know that, you know, immediately. And then I think this is the beginning and not the end of the improvements, not that I have any inside information. But you have to assume that the next step is further upgrades on the canyon side, replacing some of those fixed-grip chairs. I told Melissa early on I thought integrating Park City and the canyons was the easy part, and integrating canyons with the canyons always seems more challenging. The layout over there is, it didn't anticipate this, I guess, the best way to put it. And they'll have to make some changes and some lift upgrades there over time. But they won't do it until they know how people are using the lifts and where the traffic goes.
Yeah. Seems to me they just need another way off of the mountain other than having to wait in the Silver Lode line. But we'll see about that. You've done a great job of kind of explaining in the article, and I guess we really kind of need it in an app format, because I'm not sure we're going to haul around our magazine to follow the point to point.
The magazine would take a backpack. It's not exactly pocket sized.
Okay. Any other thoughts then on your cover story then, Murdoch to McConkie's?
I'm hearing people express a lot of skepticism and concern about where we are. And as Miles told me once, nobody likes change except a wet baby. But the change has happened, and I think it's going to be very exciting and interesting to watch it unfold. And, you know, I'm looking forward to while there'll be big changes happening on the mountain and the way we ski it, I think they'll be fun, I.
Okay.
What can go wrong?
Tom, hey, thanks for your time. And Melissa, you got the magazine out. It's being distributed, and or you could purchase it, but I think it's for free in a number of locations, yeah?
Oh, sure, yeah. Atticus Books, Deli's Bookstore. The Kimball Arts Center usually has a rack of copies there. Yeah, so it's, you know, available for purchase or for free. And I do want to add to, you know, another part of the Murdoch to McConkie stories, a sidebar that Kelly Epstein wrote. She is a local blogger who writes Mountain Mama Cooks. And she skied around last winter and went to the different restaurants on the mountain and made her picks of the best dishes to eat at restaurants on mountains. So, you know, it's not all about sliding around. It's also about eating. So.
Okay. Tom, Melissa, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll see you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:51.
This is Earl Foote, founder of Nexus IT, a proud sponsor of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Nexus IT provides comprehensive cybersecurity solutions to help protect your business from hackers and today's internet-borne security threats. More information at nexusitc.net or at 435-487-9099.
Hi, this is Lauren Forsyth with Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates, supporting my hometown radio station, KPCW. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates offers legal services in criminal, DUI, family, divorce, personal injury, and real estate. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates at the Gateway Center, 655-3680.
The Spur and Grill is proud to support KPCW, located down the alley at 352 Main Street. The Spur is open every evening with dinner, drinks, and live music. The Spur Bar and Grill.com includes music schedules, menus, and contact information.
KPCW News Time now, 8:52. Good morning. Well, the PC Mark is offering a number of programs this winter. In the studio with details, I have Recreation Manager Karen Yoakum. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sure. So you've got some both adult and youth karate programs. Tell me about that.
We started a karate program about 2 years ago, and it has expanded very rapidly. So we've broken down our youth class, our youngest class, to have one that's 4-year-olds only. So if you think your child might be interested, we have a class just for 4-year-olds, for beginners, and then we go up 5, 6, and then the ninja class starts at age 7. And we have both beginner and intermediate for both of those levels. And then our adult program is new. We've just had 2 sessions, and some of our parents whose children are in the program have done the adult program, and I have participated. And boy, does it give you an eye-opener when you're learning from an instructor who is a 26-time U.S. national champion in individual the kata, which is the series of moves. She's amazing. And I've been to 24 classes now, and not one has been a repeat of another. So it's pretty fun. A lot of confidence building in there.
So this one person teaches all of the classes?
One person teaches all the classes, and she's great. She takes it down to the lowest level for the little kids, and they always have fun. And then with the adults, we always have fun, too. There's a little giggling in there, and we're supposed to be serious.
Okay, you're also offering adult ballet. This is new.
It is new, and it's been very successful also. We have a phenomenal instructor, classical ballet. She also works at the ice arena and teaches those ice skaters that are going to be doing fancy moves on the ice. It's traditional ballet, but all levels, and that one is on Tuesdays and Thursdays, where karate is Monday, Wednesday, so you could do it all. And these programs are starting again in January. We're off for the holiday break right now, but that first week in January, we gear up with karate and ballet. And then we also have a free program. It's called our Spotlight Program, and we pick a couple of classes that we'd like to see more participation in. One of them is a phenomenal spin instructor, Dawn, who teaches on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. So if you've never been to spin, or if you'd like to try Dawn's class, those are free on Tuesdays at 6 in January. And then a really cool class, Rockin' Vinyasa Yoga, with Rosie on Wednesdays at 10:30 a.m. It's a little more upbeat and a little louder music than your normal yoga, but she's a really fun instructor, so that's a great class too.
Okay, and so those are December and January then?
Those classes are free in January. That starts in January.
Okay. Then you also have your lunchtime learning. That happens on the second Wednesday of each month at noon. What have you got coming up in January?
In January, we have a returning, one of our first Lunch and Learn presenters, Gina Van Leeuwen, is presenting on how to retrain your mind and body without using diets. So a very health conscious presentation. She was very popular last time she was here, and that will be on January 13th at noon. And on that same day, we have the Know Before You Go. The Utah Avalanche Center will be presenting on what to look for and how to be safe on the mountain. And that starts at 6:30 p.m. on that same night, January 13th.
Okay. And you've got the sale, I think, going on through, what, mid-January with your passes?
Yes, I think that the pass sale goes through January 15th. So get your pass now and get your yoga in after your skiing.
Okay. Anything else?
I think that'll do it. We hope to see some more new people come out to all these classes and participate.
Okay. Karen, thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
Karen Yoakum with PC Mark. KPCW News Time now, 8:57.
Republic Services is proud to sponsor This Green Earth on KPCW. During the holiday season, Americans discard 25% more trash than normal. Roughly 80% of what is discarded during the holidays could be recycled, from gift boxes to wrapping paper and holiday cards. Recycling during the holiday season helps keep Summit County clean.
Additional funding for programming is funded in part by Park City Nursery. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. CNS Creative, Strategic Marketing, Advertising, and Web Design. CSCreate.com. Hideout Canyon, Master Planned Community on the Lake. Info at HideoutCanyon.com. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And listeners like you.
Well, the Snyderville Basin Water Recreation... Reclamation District, meeting tonight to consider increasing fees to help pay for the $48 million redo of the Silver Creek Water Treatment Plant. The district's board of directors will consider a fee increase to raise some $26 million for the new plant. District Director Mike Lures says they have $22 million in the bank and will be looking to new development to pay for the majority of this plant, some $44 million, by increasing impact fees.
Impact fees are calculated from the needed improvements that need to be built or put in place to serve new development. So impact fees are only paid for by new development, and the largest increases that we're looking at here will be for new development only.
The existing impact fee for a three-bedroom home is about $7,000. If approved, these fees would go up 7% next year to about $7,500 and then would increase another 7% in 2017, bringing the impact fee up to $8,000. All of the money raised, he says, will go to pay for the new treatment plant while keeping the existing plant operating during construction. Construction is scheduled to start in late spring, and the new plant will be complete by the fall of 2019. A similar improvement was made in 2003 to the East Canyon Creek plant to remove nutrients from the wastewater. This project will protect the water in Silver Creek.
Silver Creek is a very small stream. In fact, it is a stream that dries up in the summertime now. So we are required to treat the wastewater to such a level to protect downstream native fish populations, such as the cutthroat trout that we have locally. And we assume zero flow above our discharge point. So we have to treat the wastewater to a point to where we can, allow the native fish population to survive.
Even though impact fees will be funding the majority of the project, he says existing users will also contribute and will see their monthly fees rise as well.
We're proposing a small 2% increase in 2016 and a 3% increase in 2017. So for the average residential bill in 2016, that would be approximately 77 cents a month. And in 2017, it'd be $1.20 a month.
The average bill, he says, will be raised to about $40 by the year 2017. Meanwhile, he's meeting with the state to start looking at the high salt levels in water discharges.
While we are spending lots of money to remove these nutrients, and it's very much needed to protect the local streams and reservoirs, there are other issues, including the salt, the low levels of pharmaceuticals that we've talked about in the past. So we have issues that we'll have to look at, and it's all a result of reduced stream flows and higher populations that generate ever-increasing amounts of wastewater.
It's Mike Lures with the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. The board again meeting tonight, 6 o'clock at the district offices in Jeremy Ranch to consider those rate increases. Coming up now on 9 o'clock, you've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Radio. Stay tuned now for Mountain Money right after news from NPR. This is community listener-supported radio KPCW Park City. From